Hello, readers. My name is Jason Jeffries, and I am your host for Bookin, presented by Quail Ridge Books, Raleigh's trusted community bookstore. We're here at the ABA Winter Institute in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and my guest today is Hanif Abdurraqib, a spectacular poet and the author of the sensational collection of essays, They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us, published by $2 Radio out of Columbus, Ohio, and now the fantastic new book, Go Ahead in the Rain, published by the University of Texas Press. Hanif, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Jason.
Yeah, so I have to tell you that I love $2 Radio, and I read nearly everything that they put out. I'm also a huge fan of music and music criticism, and your book, They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us, was a revelation to me. So when I heard about your new book, Go Ahead in the Rain, which is part of a series that is edited by my neighbor and friend, David Manconi, I had very high hopes. And Hanif, this book floored me. I sat down on my couch the other day after putting my two-year-old son to bed, and I read the whole book from cover to cover, and it really put me through an emotional ringer. The book uses a group, a tribe called Quest, as its jumping-off point, a group that I've been a huge fan of since I can remember listening to good music. I saw them at Lollapalooza in 1994, was one of the first great concerts I ever saw. My question for you, Hanif, is why a tribe called Quest?
Yeah, I've been getting asked that a lot, and I think it's essentially because the music, as a consumer of music and as someone who's loved music my whole life, I worry a lot about what gets lost in the generational gaps that happen when music shifts, and that concern is accelerated when I'm thinking about hip-hop, which is a music with really rapid shifts, especially now, right? The landscape of rap music changes maybe every... few months. And artists kind of come and go. And we're kind of in a musical landscape now where albums are released and then moved on from at a really rapid pace. And at the end of 2016, when Tribe released the last album, We Got It From Here, Thank You For Your Service, I was really concerned with the idea that in a few months that album would be a bit obsolete. And so I'd kind of compiled all these writings about my life as a Tribe fan, and University of Texas Press had approached me first to write a book about Erykah Badu, which Erykah Badu is Erykah Badu, but it just wasn't the best book for me, and instead I kind of like went to them with this cobbled together these two pieces I'd written about Tribe. I had worked at MTV News at the time, and I just had organically written three pieces about Tribe in like a 10-month span. And so it kind of picked up momentum, and I wanted to build kind of an archive of fandom, right, where my passion for this single group is reflected in the work. But to a reader, that passion could be a passion they had for anything they love.
Great. I'm a musician. One of my instruments is drums. And I know that I became a drummer in my mind when I was in elementary school, and our school library was visited by Doug E. Fresh and the Get Fresh crew. And their performance was strictly vocals, beatboxing, and desktop. And when I realized the world of creation and sound that was available to me using only my hands and the desk where I sat every day in order to learn language and science and mathematics, my life changed. At what point of your life did you realize that music was a thing that was going to hold such importance for you?
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting that you say that, because so much of what I've been thinking about lately is how the body is just endowed with, things that carry sound, right? We're like walking, living, breathing sound machines. And I think about that as a writer. I think about the ways that language, when placed next to other language, can create specific sounds. It's kind of like tuning a guitar, but as far as when I realized that music would be important for me, I think it's when I realized that there were things I just didn't have language for organically myself. I remember being a pretty emotional kid and not really understanding how to make sense of those emotions, but to say, this makes me feel the way I feel when I hear my mother singing along to Whitney Houston in the kitchen, or this makes me feel the way I feel when I hear my father pull up and he's listening to Roy Ayers or Eric Dolphy. These are things that I could use music as shorthand to get to a larger emotional landscape, and that made so much sense to me.
Excellent. I want to talk a little bit more about history and rhythm, both of which you write about a lot to begin this book, Go Ahead in the Rain. Rhythm is very important to you as a writer, especially as a poet, and undoubtedly is important to you as a fan and connoisseur of music. Can you talk to us about the evolution of rhythm as it pertains to your book, Go Ahead in the Rain?
Yeah, I think I've been thinking a whole lot about dance and performance related to dance. My next book, I have two. The next book after the next book, the next nonfiction book at least, is a book of long form work about the history of Black performance in America through various lenses, but one of the lenses is dance. And I've been thinking a lot about what it means to have no rhythm and how organically some people have rhythm and some don't, and where that's obtained from, and who does one see when they don't have rhythm but want to seek it out, right? And Tribe was who I sought out, you know, to provide some kind of power or structure to the offbeat notions that I kind of had in my head, you know. In retrospect, Tribe wasn't all that weird, but to me, as a very weird, like 11, 12, 13-year-old, they were immensely weird and cool because of their weirdness. They'd learned to manufacture a brand of cool through their weirdness. And so I wanted the book to kind of sit with jagged rhythms, with uneven rhythms, right? That's why there's the letters that are kind of interwoven into it, where the speaker kind of turns to the group itself before, you know, getting back into some historical or personal. Because to me, it was all personal, right? And so I wanted the rhythms to kind of reflect this idea of piecing together many disparate sounds to make one single sound.
Yeah, so you said the book after the book is the one about dance. What's the next book?
Next book is my second book of poems, A Fortune for Your Disaster, comes out in November from Tin House.
Excellent. Thanks, Hanif. We're going to take a short break for a word from our sponsor, and then I will be right back with Hanif Abdurraqib. The Book and Podcast is sponsored by Libro FM Audiobooks. Libro FM lets you purchase audiobooks directly from your favorite local bookstore, Quail Ridge Books. You can pick from more than 100,000 audiobooks, including New York Times bestsellers and recommendations from booksellers around the country. With Libro.fm, you'll get the same audiobooks at the same price as the largest audiobook company out there. You know the name. But you'll be part of a much different story, one that supports community. Listeners of Bookin can get a 3-month audiobook membership for the price of one. Go to Libro.fm, that's Libro.fm, and enter Bookin, Bookin, in the promo code space. With each listen, take pride in knowing that you're supporting local bookstores. I'm talking with Hanif Abdurraqib, author of Go Ahead in the Rain, published by University of Texas Press. Zooming back in to talk about A Tribe Called Quest specifically, you just alluded to this a moment ago. A few of the chapters in this book are written as letters to the members of A Tribe Called Quest, focusing heavily on Q-Tip and Fife Dog, and in one chapter, Fife's mother. These sections, more than any other, really tugged at my heartstrings. What was the impetus for the creation of these chapters?
Yeah, I mean, I decided early on that I didn't want to write a straightforward biography. That was how this book was pitched. That's how I think the proposal was laid out. But then when I got to writing it, I was kind of like not really moved by the idea. One, I think it takes a lot to make a straightforward musician biography fascinating. And I think you have to have really intense ground level access. I'm thinking about something like what Bob Mayer did with Trouble Boys, that replacements book, where he just had like so many archival photos and like access to so many people at the interior of the replacements. That, you know, that book is brilliant, right? Because of what he was afforded. I had the ability to seek that out, you know, like between UT Press and my own personal connections. There was the thing where it's like, you know, I could get some of this access. Fife's mom is a poet. who we run in similar circles. You know, it was just like, it was there for me. But then I thought, there's something about the writing of a biography that positions the writer as an expert, just by default. And I wasn't interested in expertise as much as I was interested in curiosity, in unearthing the personal curiosities that come with emotionally tethering yourself to a band, a group of people you don't know and will never know. That is where this examination came in, where I thought, what is more interesting than dissecting the personal, the historical, the political, but also in our quote-unquote current moment, what is more interesting than dissecting an attachment to a cult of personality, right? I don't know A Tribe Called Quest. We'll never know them. Even if I meet them, I'll never know them, right? And I think it was important for me to understand that. But I wanted to provide those letters as an opportunity to ask a reader to join me on the journey of the grand question of what would one say to their beloved, right? Their beloved in a case, you know, what do you say to artists who have helped you through any portion of your life, you know? To what do we owe the people who have helped us survive, even if they don't know they've helped us survive? And I wanted to really position myself as someone who was asking questions in the time. You know, I remember when A Tribe Called Quest broke up and I had so many questions I wanted to ask, and I thought, here's an opportunity for me to position these letters as a one-way correspondence that feels fulfilling. Because they're never going to answer those letters, obviously, but to write them, I was fulfilled.
Excellent. Thanks. And for fans of A Tribe Called Quest, this will be a bit of information that has already been internalized, but for those who are not yet fans, let's talk a little bit about Tribe's most recent album, which is called We Got It From Here, Thank You For Your Service. Fife Dawg died during the recording of this album due to complications related to his ongoing battle with diabetes, and this album was a comeback album for Tribe that many people had no idea was coming until a couple of days before its release. Q-Tip, who is always famously the gravitational center of A Tribe Called Quest, has been a very vocal in a different emotional way for this album because of the death of his sometimes rival and group mate and friend, Fife. Because of the election of Donald Trump, which you also tie into the death of Leonard Cohen in what is a very stirring moment of this book. But Q-Tip's emotions also came appropriately unhinged when the album was snubbed by the Grammy Awards, which most great albums are, by the way. can you talk about Q-Tip and Fife in this maybe final era in the legend of A Tribe Called Quest?
Yeah, you know, the thing I touched on in the book that I keep ruminating on is how foolish it was for me to imagine that Q-Tip would be unbothered by the Grammy snub. You know, I mean, Tribe Called Quest, I mean, Fife infamously has the line, like, I never let a statue tell me how nice I am. And they've just been so uninvested in the Grammys throughout their career, right? And so I didn't even think, you know, the morning those Grammy announcements came out and Tribe got snubbed, I didn't even consider anything. You know, I just thought, well, this is the Grammys doing what the Grammys does. They'll be fine, you know? But then it dawned on me that for someone like Q-Tip, this wasn't just an album, you know? This was a last-ditch attempt to cement a legacy and cement what they mean for the lineage of hip-hop. And he did it, you know, at least the back half of it without his partner, you know? And so I don't even know if for Q-Tip it was about... And, of course, I mean, what drew his ire the greatest is that the Grammys had Tribe Called Quest close the show the year before, you know, to do the kind of performative political thing that the Grammys often does. They had Tribe close the show the year before. And so I think for Q-Tip, it was more of a question of, you know, to what lengths will people go to use the idea of Tribe but not honor the work. And I think that is something that through his history we've kind of seen, right? A lot of, with Tribe specifically, right? A lot of because Tribe was used as a marker for quote-unquote real hip-hop for so long, they kind of became this avatar for all things. But in that process, not a lot of actual honoring of the work of Tribe was happening. So it just felt, in some ways, like this was the final straw, you know? And in retrospect, those videos of him angry about the Grammys are incredibly heartbreaking, because you are, much like through this whole album cycle after Fife died, you realize that you're watching someone wrestling with grief and loss in real time in a very immense way, right? You know, you can't run from your ghosts when their voices are on the same album as you. You can't run from your ghosts when, while performing, you have to build in, you know, parts of your set to make room for their voice, you know? And so in some ways, Fife was always on stage with them. And that is an incredible mountain of grief to have to move on your own. And so I think what has been fascinating for me, as someone who's dealt with loss in their life, was watching the usually stoic Q-Tip really fight his way through this album cycle and make it out whole, or try to make it out whole. And, you know, I was a Fife fan growing up. I mean, I write about it in the book. I was always a big Fife fan, always. So much so that revisiting the albums, and I listened to Tribe a lot, but doing a hard revisit of the albums while writing this book was really difficult for me, because I think I had to come to terms with the fact that on at least the first two albums, I mean, on the first album, Fife is barely present. And on the second one, you know, what many would deem their masterpiece, Fife is still kind of finding his legs, you know. And I remember when I was young thinking that Fife was the center of the group, because he was the one who was kind of the most absurd. You know, he was the one in the, like, bugging out video with the cups on his eyes. And, you know, scenario, he had the most kind of flourishing presence in the music video. So I often think that I, like many other people, took Q-Tip for granted. And to write this book was to revisit that and be honest with that. And to see Q-Tip angry in that moment after the Grammy announcements was to understand that, like, he has lived kind of a whole career of people taking his contributions for granted. And after this, there are no more contributions. And so now what?
Yeah, and listeners, if you haven't listened to that album, We Got It From Here, thank you for your service. It's one of the best albums that's come out in the past several years, so definitely go check it out. And Hanif, do you want to remind us of what Fife's solo album is called, in case anyone can dig that up?
Yeah, it's called The Ventilation LP.
Excellent.
It came out in the year 2000.
All right.
It's out of print, but if you can find it, do that. It's hard to find. It's actually very hard to find.
Yeah, so listeners, if you can find it, email me, please. Hanif, you'll be at the North Carolina Book Festival for our Sunday send-off event at King's in Raleigh at 2 p.m. on Sunday, February 24th. Do you want to say anything to the people of North Carolina in anticipation of your event?
Yeah, I'm so excited. You know, North Carolina has, at all its corners, some of my favorite bookstores, and some of my favorite people in the warmth of the area. I have a lot of good memories about North Carolina. And I'm kind of, I haven't read there though. I've never read, I mean, I read once, I take it back, I read once at UNC, Chapel Hill. And this year I'm reading there three times. And so I'm really thrilled to kind of, you know, a big thing with these books was that I wanted to come to places and return to places where I haven't read a lot. And I wanted to talk to people I haven't talked to and see places I haven't seen. And kind of, you know, reading the work is great and being in spaces where I can read the work is great. But what's more important to me is kind of having conversations with folks in the communities where I'm reading the work. And North Carolina is a place that's always been so, like, generous and kind and thoughtful about my work, and I'm really thrilled to be coming.
Yeah, we look forward to that. A small handful of tickets are left for that as of the time of recording, maybe not by the time this is published, but you can check that out at www.ncbookfestival.com. I've been talking with Hanif Abdurraqib, author of Go Ahead in the Rain, published by University of Texas Press. Hanif, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much, Jason.
Once again, I'd like to thank Hanif Abdurraqib for joining me. His book, Go Ahead in the Rain, is available for purchase in-store and online at www.quailridgebooks.com. The North Carolina Book Festival is February 21st through 24th in Raleigh, North Carolina, featuring local, national, and international award-winning and best-selling authors such as Hanif Abdurraqib, Sandra Cisneros, William T. Volman, Scott McClanahan, and Jill McCorkle. More information is available at www.ncbookfestival.com. My name is Jason Jeffries, and this has been Bookin'.